Quick question. When was the last time that you actually looked at your website and thought, this is really working for me? If the answer is you're not sure, don't worry because you're not alone. Most therapists have a website, but they don't actually know what's helping it to convert, what might be confusing potential clients, and what might actually be turning people away. That's exactly why a website audit is so helpful because it can give you a clear outside perspective on what's actually happening when someone lands on your website. So I'm hosting a live website audit workshop April 17th, where I will walk you through what to look for, look at your website live, talk about what to fix, and how to make your website actually work for you. To learn more and sign up, head to the show notes to register. Now, onto the episode. You're listening to the Raise to Empower podcast. I'm your host, Ashley Comegys, a licensed clinical social worker with a multi-state online therapy practice. I have a passion for empowering women and mom therapists to break free of the fear, overwhelm, and oppressive systems that hold them back from taking action and building the private practice of their dreams. My goal is for you to boldly believe in yourself as a clinician and business owner. If you're looking for a place to learn practice building strategy and skill while also claiming your own power as a woman and a therapist, then you're in the right place. Welcome to the show. Welcome to this week's episode of the Raise to Empower podcast. If you listened to last week's show, episode 64 on the fourth trimester in private practice, you heard me talk about navigating the world of breastfeeding and being in private practice on top of all the other challenges that come with returning to work after taking maternity leave. And if you didn't get a chance to listen, I highly recommend you go back and either listen to that episode before this one or after, because it ties in really perfectly with my guest today. I'm super excited to get to talk with my guest about breastfeeding and being the primary breadwinner in your household and the challenges that we may experience on many systemic levels with this. My guest today is Janelle Crummy. She is a therapist and business building enthusiast living on a mountain in Western North Carolina with a toddler, husband, Australian Shepherd, and six chickens. She provides individual and couples therapy in traditional weekly formats and customized individual therapy retreats. Additionally, Janelle has created Breastfeeding Breadwinners, which we'll get into more today. Her favorite marketing achievement so far is co-founding the WNC Therapist Culinary Club, where she organizes opportunities for local therapists to know one another more deeply. Janelle, welcome to today's show.
Thank you. I'm so glad to meet you and to be here.
I'm really excited for our conversation today, and I'm just looking forward to getting some of your knowledge for myself, but definitely for our listeners to hear about your experience and kind of what you've been kind of studying and exploring mm-hmm. around breastfeeding and having a job, having a career.
Yeah. And not just that, but that is complex in itself, but there's also the layer of like being the breadwinner of a household, which in my work I've defined as like contributing almost any amount that the family sure. depends upon, not extra. But like, you know, we're all breadwinning at this moment in the economy and the way things are and the cost of living. So, it's been really interesting to think about like, how did I not know this would be as complex as it is and bring up as much feeling as it has, and have almost no models to go off of yet.
Yeah.
What I found out was that there's lots of people out here breastfeeding and breadwinning. And we need to know each other. We need to know who each other are.
Yeah. So before we get into that more, because that's going to be mainly what we talk about today, I always ask guests to kind of share about how you got into this work and kind of what led you to the world of therapy.
I'd have to say, sometimes I draw it back to experiences in adolescence where it's like, oh, the one friend that shares the thing and you're like, I can hold that.
Yeah.
and who knows what other stuff, right, occurred in our attachment, history. But for me, I have always been on my way to being a therapist. And that starts with my just no question psych major, undergraduate degree. And focusing, doing a little research, learning that area of like the field and knowing like, okay, research happens here, doing a few projects during the summers. And then entering the field of direct care, I worked in locked facilities for foster youth whose treatments or whose placements were failing them. And I worked in therapeutic boarding schools, and I worked in group homes for folks experiencing severe mental illness and taking care of their daily needs, and then also in case management, doing homeless services for vets exiting homelessness. So, my experience ranged, right? And I've experienced a fair amount of walks of life, as we say, and built up a big tolerance for hearing hard things, and seeing hard things and experiencing realities of the world. And I think that that's something that, like, people in human services and even healthcare and teaching and all kinds of professions do get to know that, like, not everybody does. But ultimately, like, got into graduate school and started my private practice basically right after. And since then, I've had the journey of becoming a business geek, because that's what you gotta do if you wanna be a solopreneur and take care of yourself. And in 2021, yeah, finally took the leap to become the sole breadwinner for the family, as my husband's job was just, like, too outside of his zone of genius and too oppressive for his body, and all kinds of stuff. It wasn't supportive to our relationship having him deliver the mail. Then I was pregnant after that. So that's kind of how I got even to like parenthood. But my practice is about 5 years old now, and I do love it.
What was it like making that shift in the relationship, or like even like those discussions of, hey, like there's going to be a dynamic that needs to change here. Like there's essentially maybe more pressure on you. Like what was that like for you guys as you were kind of figuring this out?
At first, it was like a, how long will we be in discomfort while you sacrifice your wellness for this paycheck? And what are you getting from the job? And what are you losing in your life picture to do that job? So, like, there was an income shift. It's like, we lost that full-time income, but we also gained him for 50 hours every week. We add in the commute and the amount of time he was spending away from our home, which I'd call a homestead, right? We have the ability to make a garden that would feed us, and we can't do that if he's gone 50 hours. So he's transitioned into our childcare, basically, but which is saving us thousands and thousands of dollars. So there's different ways of looking at money and all that. And I think he knew who he married, in that, like, I would be willing to. I've been a person among our friend group who's, like, one of the only people who got a job in my career, in my field, like, after we graduated in 2009, which was a time to graduate when you're not going to expect to get a job directly with what you studied. So I've been on track, and I've been building this stuff. And as soon as I, like, got into postgraduate, like, employment, and my practice was looking good, we were starting to be able to consider, like, can you take the spotlight and take care of yourself and free yourself up to explore what you should be doing, which is painting, doing musician stuff, art, construction, farming, and now childcare. But yeah, there's so much that he can do that he can't do when he's putting paper in boxes.
So when you guys made that decision for you to be kind of the primary breadwinner, for him to step away from the job, did you have children at that point yet?
No, we did not. That was August of 2021, and I made the discovery of pregnancy in October. So, and then it combines, I think, with my practice building journey, where, like, I was also transitioning to private pay at that time. So not only was my income experiencing the dip of, like, I call it, like, demolished my caseload around having 100 sessions a month, all the way to, like, 20 for a period of time, where some folks were sticking for private pay and some folks were like, I can't do that. I was never going to do that. So there was this high pressure moment of, like, okay, am I going to pull this off? How am I going to rebuild? What's it going to look like? What's my marketing going to
Yeah.
be? And then phew, you're pregnant for the first
Yeah.
time at 35.
Yeah.
And like, wow, this was tremendous, right? It was a really big blast of pressure, I'd say.
Sure. Was there any part of you that was like, we need to go back to the old model to feel comfortable, or like, even if you weren't really going to do that, right? Even if you
Yeah,
weren't really going to be like, yep, you need to go get a job, husband, right? Like that it was this moment of, oh my gosh, like what is about to happen?
it was definitely, oh my gosh, what is about to happen? I definitely like experienced anxiety at that time, but I also knew this is still the right path. There definitely were, I mean, I think my husband's been willing to say it. I don't think I would have left if I knew that this was going to happen. I don't, you know, because of the way that costs and insurance and all that stuff like
Sure.
eventually panned out, but it kind of just made us a little bit more aware of injustices that are happening
Yep.
around transitions to parenthood and like access to insurance and affordable healthcare and
Yeah.
the like cost expectation of giving birth. Wow. So you're going to tell me that I'm going to do a natural function for my body that like gives your nation more people
Right.
to do participation in the economy. And you're going to then financially penalize me
Right.
in the four figures
Right.
and have me foot the bill for giving you more people.
Yeah.
Like it's painful. And this is
Yeah.
oppression. This
Yeah.
is like, it's not right. So that kind of got me a bit fired up. Among other things that got me fired up. Like it
Yeah.
just didn't feel right, didn't feel like I was valued or taken care of by the place where I live, the nation that I'm a part of and
Yeah.
contributing to.
Yeah. I had a similar experience of I knew that there were injustices. I knew what I've experienced in my first two pregnancies, but like something about this last one, and maybe because like the stakes felt higher with like there's already two children, like we are a two income household, trying to take care of myself, trying to take care of my children, trying to take care of my clients, like I became more aware of the injustices, like you were talking about. And I also started learning more about what this looks like, maternal mental health, maternal care in other countries. And I'm like, what the hell? Like,
Yes.
what?
Yeah.
Why are we treating our women this way? Yeah, it's I could do like a whole series on
I
this.
mean, right? This is such a big deal, right? What you're describing and what we're like agreeing upon is like,
Yeah.
this is impacting my decision about whether to keep going and having
A
kids,
hundred
right?
percent. 100%.
And that is really offensive to me.
Yeah.
And maybe I was just brought up in a country where I expected a certain amount of freedom or a certain amount of access to stuff or had certain privileges that just didn't prepare me for like for where oppression was still
Sure.
lurking. And it really is everywhere. And I'm a white person. I'm a cis white person. I do not experience like marginalization on other
Right.
levels that other people do. So I'm like, yeah, fully owning the fact that this was a smack.
Sure.
But it's real and even more complicated in other places. But basically, like, I don't think it should be okay that I should be in this heavy of contemplation about another child because I just don't know whether I can pull it off with the amount of support we have
Yeah.
and whether like there will be the supports around me if I do have bigger struggles.
Sure.
Because this shit was hard.
Yeah.
It was
Yeah.
so hard to do
Yeah.
once. I mean, and I sometimes attribute that to like I was 35 and I was well situated in my career and I really like what I'm up to and I'm into it.
Sure.
So I was like a little bit ripped away from what I like doing. I like my job. And at the same time, like my child is all about to be two now. And she's
Yeah.
like so neat, so cool. And I'm like starting to figure out like, hi, see maybe why people do this more than
Again.
once. Like it takes some time and other people are like right away, I know I want three, I know I want
Yeah.
this or that. And I'm just like, I don't know, I don't know.
Yeah.
And I stay in ambivalence until I guess until I know. But
Yeah. Yeah.
yeah, it just
No.
shouldn't be a factor that the system should be helping me decide.
No, 100%. Well, and multiple systems and factors. I'm at this point like 5 months postpartum with my third, and I have experienced postpartum anxiety with each of my pregnancies in different ways, and it showed up this postpartum experience more as like postpartum rage. And I've talked with my husband about it, and I've said, yes, like I'm have this anxiety, or I have this feeling of overwhelm and stress, but like I'm not angry like at any one particular person. I'm angry at the world. Like I'm angry at the systems that are creating this stress for me. So like, for example, I went back to work, seeing clients about a month and a half ago. And we knew that that was coming. We knew that I was, had taken off a certain amount of time. And it was the stress of, I know it's coming. I know financially I need to be able to go back to work then, because we need that. But like, I didn't fully feel like myself yet. Right. And I was doing the things, like, I have a certification in perinatal mental health. Like, I know the stuff, I know the tools, I know the resources, but like, accessing them or having the systems to support them, right? Where he has to go back to work, but I'm needing help at home tangibly, and we don't live near family, and like I can't afford to hire somebody because I'm not working, but if I was working, I could hire some. Like, just this vicious cycle that I'm like,
Ashley.
there are so many things fighting against supporting me, who is someone, like you said, I have privilege as Psy white woman, and I'm, not part of other marginalized communities. So if I am struggling, holy hell, like, what are other women experiencing?
This is absolutely it. This is absolutely it, right? There's the stretching out of our families. I don't have nearby in-laws or personal parents or siblings, right? And then there is the, like, we can know all we need to know, but can we actually pay the doula? Are we willing to have the night doula in our house? Is that normalized? Do we live anywhere near parents who are having the resources or the time freedom to actually pass our children off to? And can we even pass children off when we are actively breastfeeding, if there is, right, that like latch pressure or the way that you do it is a certain way? Like, I just remember referring to, I have spent, I don't even know how many hours on this one particular couch, the couch where we go, right? And I guess to get back to the rage piece, right? Is that you? Is that a diagnosable thing? Or is that a valid reaction to the systems and the, like, the injustice and the powerlessness that you have been facing, right? That, like, you're just stuck. And what I remember the feeling of being like, I want to, I know I can, and also I can't. And that is so sticky.
No, and I think you're spot on, because that's what I've come to realize. And, as I've thought about it in my own life, I'm like, okay, how do I look at this differently with my clients? Because I work with a lot of either women who are pregnant or in postpartum, where we have we're diagnosed postpartum anxiety or postpartum depression. And I'm like, is it truly a diagnosis, or is it a situation? Because I've been able to have enough thought in what I've been experienced to recognize this is situational. This isn't a chemical imbalance for me, but this is 100% situational, this pregnancy. That, like, if there was just more support in all of the areas you just described and in all the ones I haven't even mentioned, yeah, I would feel like I could take a breath, or I could take a nap, or, whatever it is to take care of myself. And there's just not the ability to do that, because our world is not set up in a way to support us as women that are, like you said, mothers, let alone if you add in the component of breastfeeding or pumping, even, right? That,
Multiple
like, it's
children,
multiple children.
right? I mean, I've been just puzzled, like, how do people put more than one kid to bed? I just, like, there's some how-to stuff that's not reaching
If
me, or
anybody
like,
has instructions, please send them my way. Because, yeah, no,
well,
you're right.
And that speaks to like the like missing wisdom that like is happening to our generation possibly, right? So why is it that I learned everything about breastfeeding and pumping from TikTok? Why is it that I know where I'm going to go when I want to find out how to put multiple children to bed? It's Instagram. Right. And that's like, that's the new mother. That's the new info source. And we're in this like internet generation. Maybe you're like a early millennial like me, that like we did experience the internet as like a first generation thing where like it's normal to us, but we also know there's like something else that we're lacking and that we're missing. We know this was education from our mothers or our grandmothers or a community of women that doesn't exist anymore. And it does, but it's like so fringe. And then if we think about like that breastfeeding is so hidden and stigmatized and shamed in some environments. And like, it's just not normalized in a way that would make us comfortable, just like in the grocery store. I know I've spoken to breastfeeding breadwinners who like are like, no, I insist that I walk around the world and breastfeeding will be an integrated part of that. But it was an outlier. There was a lot of isolating and there's a lot of hiding. And that's not gonna, do anything for oppression. So
We've all been told we need to network in our private practice, but no one actually tells us how to do it or what to say. Enter Comprehensive Connecting, effective scripts that expand your networking community and actually fill your online practice. This free guide will give you effective scripts to connect with fellow clinicians, medical professionals, and community stakeholders to build strong networking relationships that will help fill your practice. In this guide, you will get tips and tricks for building relationships that will lead to referrals in your practice, real-life examples of messages used to connect with referral sources, and customizable plug-and-send scripts for your specific practice needs. So download your free scripts guide today by going to bit.ly/compconnecting. What have you found, like, as you were journeying into being breastfeeding breadwinner, as you were making that journey, what was it that you were finding that you were kind of butting up against that you're like, wait a second, I did not expect this challenge?
Yeah. For me, like just even becoming a parent, no, it really was the breastfeeding itself. It's like, number one, that boobs do anything, that they do something. I could not believe that my anatomy was real. And I don't know if that resonates with anybody listening or with you. I just had never seen a lactating breast. That speaks to a really, really like big lack of exposure and normalcy of what body, like 50% of the population's bodies do this thing. And I've never seen it in 35 years of my life. How stigmatized does something have to be? How shamed do people's bodies have? This is like some really early feminist type stuff, right?
Yeah.
Like, oh, we're still fighting some really, really old stuff. But anyway, like the frequency and the dependency of an infant was really shocking to me. The like, there is nothing else that I can think about or prepare for or like recover from in the period of days that are in the first several months of raising an infant that is like, what are my boobs doing? What is this baby doing? And how do I learn? Like, I could learn one thing, which was like how to do breastfeeding. And my partner was doing the, like all the burping, all the changing, all the figuring of like other things. Like, could I had, that's my capacity. That skill set is so, steep. The curve is really, really curvy. So that was shocking. I thought maybe I could like enjoy some of the time off. I mean, I enjoyed that I had it and I enjoyed that I could focus on doing this thing. And there were moments of like, wonderful, like pretty cool. This is neat. And it's like maybe one time in my life that I'm doing this. But like, as I wrote in one of the blogs, this like parental leave is not time off. It is not a vacation. It is It is 100% labor wall to wall. It's working. That's not off time. And people, I don't think people really know that in like standard workplaces. Oh, maternity leave must be nice. Nope.
My husband actually was coming back from paternity leave to his office, and someone was like, "Oh, how was your vacation?" He was like, "This was not vacation, even for him, right?
Yep.
Like,
And
this was not vacation. This was a lot of work and torture at times."
And like some people get it and have been there, and other people haven't. And then there's like discrepancies in like how partners and men participate in the newborn life, where sometimes they're like not participating and don't change diapers. That stuff still exists, I found in some of the interviews I did. Like, no, really, some of this really stays women's work in some families and some cultures.
Have you found in like your discussion with, other women who are in this position? And I know I get a sense you maybe have talked with women who maybe like work at like an office versus those who kind of work for themselves. What's the biggest difference that you've noticed in like their challenges? Because I know what it's like to work for myself from home and my baby's just in the other room versus I have to go somewhere and I am separate from that child, but I'm still breastfeeding.
It kind of speaks to these like issues of choice and sacrifice and heartbreak and grief. Because when people go to an office, there is like, yes, I have to pack up my pump. And I mean, I have to start and choose that like some partial exclusive pumping is starting to happen. Would I have chosen that if I weren't working outside of my home? Like, I don't know. And so for me, like when we talk about removing choice from people, like, is it a choice to be like, yes, I still choose this job? Because that's a value I want to like amplify and allow to exist. You could choose your job and say, I want to be there. But part of what we did in the work was like also imagining what else is possible, around like, well, what if there were childcare centers and what if someone brought you your baby?
In the
Like,
workplace,
yeah. And what if like that were normal? And that like latching were the expectation, if that is the person's choice, right? And because exclusive pumping totally exists, and all the other types of feeding exist as well. But do we really get to make choices, or do we like are we forced into choices? Are we voluntold like what options are available in order to keep that job? So it's like it's really hard stuff to face, like, did I choose this, or is this the choice available? And so I'll take it. And would I have made this in another way? I think the packing up and going is a functional and like executive functioning tax, right? Like the bringing the pump and cleaning the pump and like all of that stuff is an additional layer of challenge that I felt grateful to be on my homestead and to be having an office that's not inside my house, but 100 steps away. Like all I had to do was shift my schedule and make sure I didn't work for more than 2, 3 hours at a time. And like, but boy, were those breaks busy. And
It's
like,
not a break.
no, I'm like staying hungry and trying to stay fed the whole time. Like it was really like an experience of getting, I don't know, I was returning to like animalhood, and that like having physiological needs met was a priority. I guess I'm getting off topic, but
No, absolutely. I mean, it's part of it. I mean, I am breastfeeding my third right now, and I've had to build my schedule where I have more breaks between clients that I didn't do that before having this baby. And they're not breaks. I'm either like nursing her during that time, or if she's asleep, I'm pumping so that way I'm not getting too full and that like I'm keeping up my supply and she has a bottle for later, right? So like something is happening. Like it is, I am finding it a little bit nice to just have like the mental break of like client work during that time, but there is still work happening.
it
And there's,
extends your day, right? You don't get to be as efficient with your business because you have to prioritize this thing. So I think what we're really talking about is like that parenthood is expensive, for business owners and for like parent. Like it's just not, it's not a natural, smooth occurrence
No.
anymore, if it ever was. But it's like it really is, like a whole nother job, but it's not a another 40-hour a week job. It's a round the clock job that you add.
Right.
And you know better than I do as a parent of more than one. Like I, it just takes a lot. And people should know that in choosing that, right, it is this like totally life-changing thing that can be viewed as trauma in the therapy room when we think something was one way before and something was totally different after, and it's never going back.
Yeah.
That is, right, some in some definitions of
There's
trauma.
grief there. Yeah, there's grief. I mean, I think a lot of friends of mine even and clients that I work with, like there's this grief around this loss of self, this loss of like former identity or just even time that like happens when we transition to parenthood. And even, you know, I was thinking recently, I was like, man, I thought it was hard after one. And like it was hard. Don't get me wrong. Like it was hard, but like I had a little bit more time than I'd have had after two. And sure as hell more time than after three, right? That like there's even as we've added children, again, I do not regret my kids whatsoever. I am so grateful for them. I like don't regret having three.
No.
It is hard though. And there is a sense of loss of like our relationship looks different. My business looks different because just the season I'm in right now, it cannot be what it was prior to a third kid, prior to two children. Like it just has to look different.
And your needs are different around how do you regard this choice and what, like, I don't know, what is awesome about it, while at the same time having to be witnessed about like that you have grief, that it is hard, right? And I hear, you know, elder parents saying things like, and my three kids, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, yeah, they're in college now.
Yeah.
And do we block out the early years, or like, is that like a built-in brain function to like forget the hard stuff?
Right.
And like, I guess like I get why people are like so proud, because it is so darn hard,
Yeah.
and that's ultimately what's happening. But I just don't want it to be like, I
Right.
don't, and we end up building resentment for kids that way. We end up making kids feel like they owe us stuff, or like, you
Yeah.
know, that thing with, the way that parents can dysfunction is like resenting your kids for existing, which is not their
Right.
fault at all.
Right. And I think the hard part too is again, we're living in a world where I think having family support is almost a rarity now. And it could be you have family that wants to support you, but like you said, a lot of our parents' generation, they're still working. My parents just retired, but they live hundreds of miles away in another state, right? A lot of people's parents still do need to continue to work because again, economy, age, whatever the reason is, that there's not this sense of like I have these people around to support me. So again, then it's the building of the exhaustion, the tiredness, the resentment that it's not that like I'm angry that I've had children or that like, you know, I'm want to not have this child, but it's just this is really hard right now and I want to be there for you as my kid. And I'm having a hard time like figuring out how to do that.
Yeah. And then we end up like accidentally from the stress or the loss of resource, becoming a parent that we didn't have to be.
Right.
Like, how many times do you just like not have the emotional resources to respond in the way that you would have
Yeah.
chosen?
Yeah.
That is an actual like experience of harm. Like, I am not trying to be a certain way with like, I don't know what temper, anxiety, or patience,
Right.
that like I know if I were a better resourced, I know how to be.
Yeah.
So these are like non-monetary costs of like the resources we don't have. Yeah, just thinking about like hearing stories of people whose parents live 2 hours away and they take their 7-month-old for like a weekend or a day. I'm like,
Right.
that would be a gift. And I sit here like with a stay-at-home parent in the picture who I also need to relieve from time to
Sure.
time, right? Like, or not from time to time, every single day.
Yeah, right.
Every time I am not in session, right? I am over there, right?
Yeah.
Doing parenting. So we're almost like two stay-at-homes, but thank goodness my caseload is small and I don't know. I'm like, I guess, willing to do less for my business right now in order to be here for toddler zone. But in researching and kind of like interviewing breastfeeding breadwinners in the like double digits, I found a characteristic that like I can't tell whether it's inherent to a person or whether it like came from the experience. But like so that we have discussed a little bit of the like I would access resources, but I either can't afford it or they're not around or whatever. And I started noticing, right, like I want to depend on people, but like it's also really hard. And we're also kind of like, if you think about a breastfeeding breadwinner, there's a person who's like not compromising on their values, who's interested in their career enough to be like kind of an excellent territory around wanting to do it, liking to do it, and being good at it. So there's this high achieving element. But there's also this like, maybe I could depend on others, but I just will do it myself, which I would call the counter dependence. And it made me start asking people, hey, like before this ever happened, would you have ever described yourself as somebody who has trouble depending on other people? And then it kind of like, I started asking people and they would be like, oh yeah, definitely, absolutely. And there was a lot of confirmation of that characteristic, which made me really curious about like what upbringings and what prior life experiences result in people being so in charge and so in control and so having such a hard time accepting support. Is it because there isn't any support to begin with? Or is it that like survival needs for this generation are so extreme that we are all controlling our stuff really tightly? And it's just a really interesting question that like I found a pattern around folks that like can do this and do this at much cost to them. Because there's like an integrity piece of being like, no, I'll do this even though it's hard. And I'll compromise if I have to.
Well, and I wonder, thinking about, okay, so what could be a common trait with that characteristic? I think for a lot of women in general, especially women who are maybe more career minded or entrepreneurial, or just recognize like to be in a space as a woman requires me to have to show up in a different way where I can't maybe show weakness because then I'm not given the same opportunities or I'm not taken as seriously. And so asking for help is not seen as like empowered or, driven or competent. And so I just have to push through and power through and prove myself. So you have that combined with, like what was childhood like? Like, why can't you depend on other people? But how does that play in, into this? And I also think I'm seeing more conversations around this. There has been a narrative of, well, you wanted to have kids, right? Like you can figure it out, right? Like I've figured it out before. Or this is supposed to be natural. This is supposed to be normal. I'm supposed to know how to breastfeed. I'm supposed to know how to care for kids. And it's like, according to who? Because while there are some things that like may feel instinctual for some, it may feel completely foreign or traumatic for others. And so to give some grace that like, if it doesn't come easy for you, that doesn't mean you've done something wrong. Like this shit is hard.
Yeah, and it also like makes me curious whether there is a legacy of counterdependence that goes back even farther, right, than this century or than this millennium that like really is inherent to birthing people around figuring it out and not asking for help or not having help if we're thinking about like how did even our species come to survive? It was from breastfeeding. It was from women being left alone and having to figure it out while somebody went and got some more calories. So there is this like, I don't know, really, really deep and primal kind of element that like comes out. And I think we would all benefit from knowing that like it doesn't feel great. And maybe we don't have to feel that way anymore. And maybe we can start leaning on support differently and accepting it But it's just kind of a shame that like it has to be paid support, or it's more likely to be medicalized support than it is to be, your neighbor who's your age, which I don't have, and I don't know, your parent or your family of women, which not everybody has.
Or that have experienced the same things as you. Like, my mom was, she breastfed both my brother and I with very little issues. I have struggled in all three of my breastfeeding journeys, for a variety of reasons. And so, like, she wouldn't have necessarily been able to support me on that, right? Because it's just been a totally different experience. And so then, like, who do I turn to? Who do I access?
So what are you finding that has worked and made it so that you have had three and you're still going, right, and trying? What gets you through the hard moments?
That's a really good question. Leading up to this pregnancy, or in this pregnancy, I started to do my own work around my mental health connected with breastfeeding, because with my first son, I was able to breastfeed for not quite 2 months before he started having some serious issues, very low weight gain, horrendous diapers. And at the time, we thought it was just like a milk soy protein intolerance. Fast forward to 6 months old, we eventually realized he has severe food allergies, but I had been doing like elimination diets and all of this stuff, and it still wasn't clearing up because I wasn't clearing his allergen. So he also was having very low weight gain, so he was burning more calories than he was taking in. So I just had to do a lot more bottle feeding. My second son, I didn't realize till I had my second child that I had not processed the trauma that I had experienced in my breastfeeding journey with my first. And as soon as my middle child started showing similar signs, it was just this flood of anxiety and worry and stress. And like, thankfully, there were things I'm like, I know what to do as far as I'm getting him on this specialty formula because we're not going down the same path. And it turns out he doesn't have the same allergen, or he doesn't have any allergens compared to my first. So as I was able to come out of that experience, I recognized I knew at the time I had really bad postpartum anxiety, but I didn't realize how bad it was till I came kind of like the other side. And because of my experience with my first, I've always just been, my goal is to breastfeed, and I will feed until it works or until it doesn't work for myself or my baby, right? Like, it didn't work for my baby because he was allergic, right? He was allergic to the things I was eating, and we didn't know. And so with this one, I said, I really want to try. We don't know what's going to happen to her as far as if she'll have any issues, but I always would have a lot of anxiety just around the act of breastfeeding because, is the baby getting enough? Is the baby gaining? You go to those doctor's appointments and they're like, oh, well, you have to wake them up every 2 hours. And like, the rigidness, especially at the beginning of breastfeeding, was very anxiety inducing for me. So I started working with a therapist who was also a lactation consultant during my pregnancy to just help me to kind of think through that stuff. And then reached out to a lactation consultant to have like ready to go as soon as I had delivered. And thankfully that was a benefit that my insurance like now had that I didn't have before. And again, it's like medicalized, but that has been super helpful because she has some specialized training in dealing with babies that have either food allergies or sensitivities. And my daughter has exhibited some of the bloody stools and the mucousy diapers. And so I've had support to know how to handle it in a way that I never knew how to handle it before. That has allowed me to go the furthest I've gone so far breastfeeding, and like, to not panic, to not have the anxiety driving the decisions I'm making. It has absolutely flared up at times when we've been in some bad periods, but I feel like because I knew that this was going to be hard, allowed me to set up supports to make this journey different. And so that's where, yeah, I can say, like, I guess I'm grateful for the experiences I've had in the past because I knew what I needed this time. But for that first time mom or first time breastfeeding or first time experiencing a challenging breastfeeding experience, if you don't know those resources or you don't know what is going on, that can totally upend you mentally, emotionally, physically, and make that process so much harder.
Yeah, thank you for sharing just what like the tribulations of figuring stuff out, and it's almost like iterating with wisdom about like how do I check it and see if it's the same this time, how do I get the support around me this time. And I've talked to people who whose situation in the second was a lot different from it was when it was the first. And it is so hard, right? And not a lot of visibility is given to these struggles. I remember, I guess, like kind of late in the journey, I entered and joined some Facebook groups like Breast Friends and More or something. And there's all these pictures of like, and stories of like, this is as far as I've gone, and this is where I'm at, and this is what we've been through, and what do I do now? And there was like an actual like community conversation happening. I was like, oh, okay, it's here. It's in the depths of Facebook, and you have to go find it. But it's, and like people were saying things like, I wouldn't share this on my normal feed, but I can now I can share it with you all. And like, there is, and what a poverty for our culture. That there is just isn't spaces where it just feels free and possible to be destigmatized. And I know like I feel stigma around like we're having this conversation and Ashley's sharing this and I'm sharing that and like this is public and at the same time this is as visible as I'm willing to be at this time, and it's a stretch for me, and it is still work around I don't know, like allowing there to be any more voices at all around these kinds of things that do need seen and they do need cared for and validated, because the isolation really is part of the pain.
Well, absolutely. I mean, I think all like the different places of like intersection right now, right? Like isolation happens in private practice, isolation happens in motherhood, isolation happens with breastfeeding. And so, and then there's absolutely isolation in womanhood as well, too. And so like all of that combined can just make it, you know, so much more challenging. And if you don't have those spaces to connect with others who are experiencing what you're experiencing, whether it is an easier breastfeeding journey, whether it is a challenging balance of work, private practice, motherhood, breastfeeding, right? Like if there's not places where you can say, like you said, anybody else experiencing this, or this was a win, right? That like the fact that, you know, I breastfed for 2 weeks is a win, where like for others that might feel shameful, right? But that you can find people that champion you and that support you and saying, yeah, that is awesome. Regardless of what your choice is, if you continue or you stop, that is awesome that you've done what you've done.
Yeah. And then if we just think about other intersections and like imagining what world is possible, there's this the expensiveness of being the birthing parent who takes the leave if as the breadwinner, like literally costs thousands of dollars in lost income for a family if self-employed, right? Or also if not, if the job doesn't provide the leave, the paid leave. So if we think about like how disenforced it is for us to go ahead and do this, right? It's like it's unbelievable, really, the challenge we're trying to face and the cost that it takes to actually try. But then as well, like what kinds of co-parents and partners is it taking to interact with a breastfeeding breadwinner? And what kinds of like characteristics do they have that like are willing to do gender non-conforming family patterns and like also deal with the emotional consequences of like not being provider in that traditional economic
Sure.
sense, and like what families go through on that level.
Sure.
It's just there's a lot of interesting stuff to get into and explore. And like, I guess the reason I would want to be here having this conversation with this audience is like when you are in the room with someone who might be a breastfeeding breadwinner, pay attention to that. Like that is an actual marginalization
Yeah.
intersection that like needs attention and needs care and validation, witnessing, recognition,
Yeah.
and support, right? Where somebody might be counterdependent, could there be an area for them to take in some support? Like you've got this lactation consultant who seems to have helped, and
Yeah.
you've found a way, right, to say yes, and to build that in now that you know. Yeah, it's just amazing how the loss of awareness really will lead to like
Yeah.
continued oppression for birthing people, and how I don't know, that's not the world I'm trying to live in.
Right,
So
right.
there was this real big barrier in the interviews that I did for people to imagine alternate universes, right? Other worlds where like, you know, the baby is brought to you, or that like actual leave is covered even
Yeah.
for self-employed people, right? Or that
Yeah.
like pregnancy, it like that there's a bigger window for bringing life into the world. Like,
Yeah.
I remember I took 4 months off, and part of that was my 9th month or 10th month, I don't even know, of pregnancy. And I wished at a certain point that I had taken even sooner time off
Sure,
to be
sure.
disabled,
Right.
for goodness sakes. And then that I was disabled for a little while afterwards. Like how little support we have
Yeah.
is astounding,
Yeah.
astoundingly wrong.
Yeah. And I mean, I've said to my husband just the other night, and I'm sitting there pumping at like 10 o'clock at night before I go to bed. And I was like, I swear, if men had to do this, the world would not be set up the way that it is. It wouldn't. It would not be set up the way that it is. If you guys had to go through the process that we have to go through in pregnancy, childbirth, and then in postpartum, it would not. We would have coverage. We would have access to care. We would have support. Like, it would be a completely different world.
Yeah. It's interesting to think about if they had to, would they even have become men, and would they have even had the luxury of
Yeah.
oppressing, or would they have been women and been unable to create the patriarchy the way that
Yeah. Yeah.
it has evolved? Right. So it's
Yeah.
like, how do we coexist with differences and like rebalance for differences
Yeah.
in anatomy and in choice and in I don't know, capacity, like for all people
Yeah.
to live in the world how they wish to, and like still be able to, and then this is just like expanding out outside of the discussion of parenthood, but like can people of all abilities access the world in a way that they can still be so well that they can experience spirituality, right?
Yeah.
Because I think that we lose some of that when we're survival. Working on like just getting through. Like the world is a pretty neat place. It's a pretty
Yeah.
amazing place. And I can't enjoy it when I'm like literally trying to make dollars.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or like, you know, in all the ways that like we have to just hustle
Yeah.
constantly. So how do we accommodate? How do we
Yeah.
accommodate all folks at different levels according to their need?
Yeah. One more question. In your research and talking with other women who are the breastfeeding breadwinners, are there certain challenges? And I'm thinking more so like for those that are like outside of the house working. Are there certain challenges that you found were more common than others in their experience? And if so, thinking about like our work as therapists, because I think you brought up a good point. Like, if for listeners, it may not just be about how do we support ourselves, but we're going to be coming up with clients that are going to be in this position and how do we support them? And so I'm curious, like, what were some of the, bigger issues that or more common issues that came up, and what are some things that we can do to support or, advocate for them?
Yeah, I think what comes to mind first is like I interviewed folks from a couple different generations. So some folks
Hmm.
who were parenting in the 80s and in that range. I remember hearing stories of people breastfeeding or pumping in bathrooms. and in storage rooms and in like just unusual environments that definitely didn't like meet sanitary standards that we would prefer. And that kind of stuff like really stood out to me, right? We are only some workplaces with high resources, like really big companies are starting to do things like have lactation rooms with pumps included, so you're not lugging the thing back and forth. But like workplace accommodations is a really big answer to this question. Like that workplaces need to centralize or accommodate almost as a requisite, that breastfeeding happens, that parenthood happens, and that like workplaces or managers and bosses should not have the right to even speak a word about when are you done with that. Or how long is this going to be going on? Or how long am I going to be paying for your breaks? Or like, I resent the investment we had to make in the like lactation room. There are some cool innovations though that are coming out. Like, I forget what it's called, but there is like a cool turnkey like service that will come into workplaces and install like a
Oh,
room where
interesting.
lots of different accommodations are found, and there's privacy and dignity and comfort, and like you can just like have a dignified experience instead of like I'm hiding and somebody's going to the bathroom next to me. Or like, yeah, it's just, yeah. For the most part, it's like, how do I do this and the job and not experience stigma, shame, or like resentment from others? I spoke to somebody in a birthing center who was experiencing colleague drama around the breastfeeding journey that she was having as a worker, right? Like, and it was like, of all places that we're gonna do like weird coworker drama, that's happening here. And that, you know, so there's just like really, really deep, I don't know, difficulty around all that is fraught with this issue. Like, if somebody didn't get to go where they wanted to go on their journey, that they're gonna be kind of like weaponizing that against other women or lactators. It's just like, we're not healed, we're not okay. And I think that that is apparent.
Well, and one thing that I'll kind of offer that has helped me this time around with my breastfeeding journey is like breastfeeding, like I said, has been very stressful for me in general, and especially breastfeeding in public. It's not so much of like, oh, I don't want people to see it. It's not that, but I am very large chested. It takes both hands to handle baby and breast and all of this, and like I'm always in like contorted positions and I'm sweating and I'm hot. And so like for those that are like, I just throw a blanket on and nurse, I am envious of you because it's just not been what it's been like for me. And so like within a couple weeks after my daughter was born, I said to my husband, I was like, you know what, I don't care where we're going, I'm just bringing my pillow with me because it's much more comfortable for me. I don't care if people are like, you've got a lot of extra stuff and you're just going into, the doctor's appointment or whatever the thing is. Like, I'm like, no, like I feel less anxious, I feel less stressed, and this is what I need to make this experience more comfortable for me. And so, I guess just to encourage listeners that if you're feeling like that, whether it is in your own home or in public, or if you do work in an office outside of the home and you're trying to figure out like, how do I make this work? You do have rights. You do have rights when it comes to employers. And so like, if there are things that you need to not be afraid to say either like, what can you guys do to help support this? Or this is how it's going to be. Like, this is when I'm going to take my breaks. The babysitter is going to bring me the baby, or I am going to pump. Like, what do you need to make this work for you? And even if it looks different than, well, this other person did it this way, cool. They don't need their big pillow lugged around. I do, in order to feel relaxed and be able to feed my baby.
Yeah, I love that you are listening, right, to what will make you more comfortable and to make it just smoother. And I don't love that we like have to self-advocate and feel like we have to just like take a stance because it's not already been taken. But this is, I guess, the edge of where we are innovating and advocating. So, Yeah, I guess like bring it out of the shadows too, right? Like
Yeah,
talk about it with
exactly.
and find anybody to talk about
Exactly.
with.
Can you talk a little bit about you have like an individual retreat, I think, for breastfeeding breadwinners. Can you share a little bit about that?
So yeah, the reason I even did this interview project was because I am in my business attempting to establish like us like a line of service that is individual therapy retreats, and I will serve anybody on any issue that they want to spend several hours doing a therapy intensive about. And while I was in business coaching, kind of about it was like an exercise in niching, an exercise in voice of consumer data acquisition, and finding the mission, finding some pain and discovering like, well, what can we do? What can we imagine? And how can we support vulnerable populations or populations who really do need a whole entire day off to talk
Yeah,
about what they're experiencing? So
sure.
amazingly, you said one word earlier, which was take a breath. And I named the retreat day for breastfeeding breadwinners, the breastfeeding breadwinners breather. And it really can't be a long intervention. You can't come away for 5 days, right,
Yeah.
and do a deep therapy experience, because logistically that's just not there. It is possible to step away from your household for a day with a certain amount of preparation and a certain amount of support and accommodation, that if you need to, right, there is the space out here in Western North Carolina where you can come
Yeah.
and sit and talk to somebody who's getting it and who is specializing in this area. And yeah, ultimately, like it's benefited my practice to have looked into this population and given myself like the validation of like, hold on a minute, I think I'm going through something that like just
Yeah.
isn't well known, well seen, or well enough cared for. So it was really validating to talk to other folks and see like, no, it is hard. It really is isolating and different, and we're not well enough prepared for what's real here. So this is just my offering around like, I see you, you're welcome here. And if your partner or other children want to wait on the other side of the mountain, we'll be able to take care of you. And the day is like kind of a la carte design, customize yourself. So like if you want a massage therapist, I will bring them. If you want an Ayurvedic consultation, I can bring somebody for that. If you want a tarot reading, if you want a Reiki session, all that's available for you if you want to make a day to treat yourself and take care of your
Yeah.
needs within the window of preparation for or after or
Yeah.
during the breastfeeding journey.
Yeah. Because it really is a journey. It really is a journey. And I think it's important to recognize that because, again, I think there is a lot of stigma and there is a lot of pressure and, comparison, but just to remind ourselves that like it is a journey and your journey is going to look different than my journey and it's going to look different between each children.
And sometimes you need a
And
break.
yeah,
Don't
exactly.
break.
And that's okay. That's okay. It is okay to need a break, to need that breath. Anything else before we wrap up, Janelle, that you want listeners to know kind of about either the research or just about this process of being, a breastfeeding breadwinner?
I don't know. I can ultimately like I think I just want folks to know that if you have done or occupy the location of breastfeeding breadwinner, like you are awesome, right? There is, right, a real special superhuman feeling of accomplishment that you can take instead of like, this is so hard, right? Not instead of, but in addition to like, this is so hard, and like, look at me doing it.
Yeah.
It really is amazing. And I think, if we can get recognition out there to folks going through this stuff, I think it would go a long way instead of the invisibility and silence and I don't know, I guess hiddenness of the population. We celebrate Mother's Day, and yet like there's other people doing this who don't identify as mothers, and
Yeah.
it's just like a combination of nonconformity that
Yeah.
like deserves a little bit of credit. So I see y'all, and you're welcome to be in service with me if you'd like.
If people want to learn more about you or connect with you, where's the best place for that to happen?
I did start breastfeedingbreadwinners.com. So that's where some of the writing that I did is housed. And I welcome guest blogs, people sharing their experiences at any point. You reach out to me through my regular website. My therapy website is growthpointcollaborative.com. And you can find my email address on there, janelle@growthpointcollaborative.com. And yeah, like anybody across the nation can come to Western North Carolina, where we're just outside of Asheville. Lots of wonderful stuff to experience out here. And my office has a view in a private forest, and we can walk and talk, or we can sit in here and or go to the private forest and sit down on a log and do your therapy work. So if you need to get out of town or whatever you want to do, I'm here for that kind of service for folks.
And we'll have links to all of that information in the show notes so people can easily go there and find you to be able to connect. I'm really grateful for our conversation today, and my brain's going of like all these ways that we need to work to collaborate. So I have a feeling this won't be the last time we hear you on the show, but I really appreciate you being here and just sharing your experience and your knowledge of this with all of us.
Well, thank you, Ashley, and thank you for the opportunity, and also thank you for the work that you do to create your family that you want to be having. So, good job in case you need to be told.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much for listening to the Raise to Empower podcast. Check the show notes for all links and resources mentioned in the show. If you found today's episode helpful or inspiring, be sure to share it with your therapist friends. And don't forget to subscribe to the show and leave your 5-star rating and review. It truly means so much to me and will help us get our message of empowerment out to other women and mom clinicians. And I'd love to connect with you in our Facebook community. So check out the show notes for the link or head to bit.ly/raise to empower to join us. I'll see you back here next week.